This is Rob Meredith reporting for Blind Cool Tech, and today I'd like to give my review of the Edirol R1 Portable Wave / MP3 Recorder. This is a pretty nice recorder for those who are interested in making high-quality stereo recordings on the go. It features two built-in microphones. It'll record to Wave or MP3. It'll playback Wave or MP3 files. And it's relatively small, fitting in most large pockets. The R1 is about 4 inches high, 5.3 inches wide, and about an inch thick. It comes with a protective case, which essentially is a side zipper type pouch case, which unfortunately is a little large to fit in one's pocket. So if you're going to carry it in the pocket, unfortunately you'd be better off just leaving the case at home. The case also does not have a handle or shoulder strap of any kind. Before we dive into any more detail, let me mention that the manual is not accessible. You will need to scan it if you want to read it. I did a pretty extensive online search and unfortunately could not find any version of the manual in electronic format. The description and unit specifications are available on the Edirol website. I will give contact information for Edirol at the end of this review. Let's go over all the controls and connectors on the R1. As we move up the left-hand side of the unit, we first encounter the USB 2.0 port, which of course can also be used with USB 1.1, but the 2.0 gives you fast file transfers between the unit and your PC. Above the USB port, we have the record level control, which is thankfully an analog control. It's a traditional thumb wheel type control. And for this review, I have the control all the way up. Let me also mention here that I'm going to try to use the R1 to record substantially all of this review, so you'll get to see how it works in a real-life situation. When this review is complete, I'll be sending it to the PC and editing it down with Studio Recorder. I won't, however, use any normalization or volume or any other processing, so you can really get an idea how the R1 sounds. Since I'm recording in a uncompressed wave format, I'll be using the LAME encoder to encode it before I send it to Blind Cool Tech. Above the record control, we have the condenser mic / dynamic mic switch. And this switch lets you either apply plug-in power for a condenser microphone or disable this power so that you can use a dynamic microphone. It's best, in fact, to use the built-in microphones with the condenser power off, it turns out. Above the condenser mic switch, we have the line input, which is an 1/8-inch stereo jack. And above the line input is the mic input, which is also an 1/8-inch stereo jack. And that covers all the connectors on the left side of the unit. Moving across the top of the unit, we have the 1/8-inch stereo headphone jack, which also doubles as an optical digital output jack. Then we have the wheel for the output volume level, followed by the hold switch, which is like a lock. When this switch is engaged, none of the buttons on the device nor the control wheel have any effect. Although, unfortunately, you could still change the record level and playback level. So even with the unit locked, you'd want to be careful not to bump the record wheel. To the right of the hold switch, we have the DC in jack for use with the supplied power supply. And finally, to the right of that, we have the on-off switch. The only thing on the right edge of the unit is the edge of the value wheel. Now, the value wheel is used to make selections in menus, to move through songs on the device, as well as to choose effects and change effect parameters. There are no controls on the bottom edge of the device. The only thing that's down there is the door where the compact flash card resides. On the front of the device, we have the display, the microphones, and the rest of the controls. At the top are the two microphones, one on the left side and one on the right side. These are omnidirectional. This particular device has what I consider to be rather good built-in mics. I think it sounds much better than most of these similar small recorders I've seen. And it does let you record in stereo right out of the box. There's no need to connect any microphones. You can if you wish. But what I find is it's just so easy to grab it and go. I mean, you can grab this thing and turn it on. It probably takes about 3 seconds to boot up, and you can instantly be recording. Below the microphones, we have the display. It's a two-line, 20 character per line, LCD orange backlit display. Below the display, we have four round buttons. And these are effects toggle, edit, menu, and display. Below these four buttons, there's four rectangular buttons, which are previous track, next track, repeat, and speed. Finally, below these four, there's three buttons, and these are two rectangular buttons and one round button, with the leftmost being stop, the next one being play/pause, and the rightmost is the round recessed button, which is record. And this button is recessed, so you can't easily bump it. When you first press the record button, you enter record standby mode. At that point, the record button begins to blink, and you can set your levels. To begin recording, you can either press the play/pause button or the record button once again. Pressing the record button while you're recording has no effect, so when you first enter record mode, you can feel secure in pressing record as many times as you need to be sure you're in record mode. While recording, the play/pause button acts as a pause toggle. Unfortunately, if you're in pause mode after you've begun recording, pressing record has no effect, so you really do have to remember which state you're in and be careful to press the pause button just once. To end recording, you press stop. That leaves three more controls. These are the exit button, the enter button, and the value wheel. I mentioned the value wheel earlier because it protrudes a bit from the right side, but most of the value wheel appears on the front of the device. The exit button is just left of the value wheel and is a small round button, while the enter button is at about the maybe 7 o'clock position from the value wheel and is a larger round button. The repeat button is not the normal kind of repeat button you would usually think of with players. This is more of an AB repeat button, where the first time you press repeat, it marks a starting point, and the second time you press repeat, it marks an end point. The unit then plays a loop between the two points. The speed button is used to slow down the material to one half of its original playback speed. I guess this feature is intended for musicians. I can't think of many times I would prefer to use it. Unfortunately, there is no way to speed up playback material, which is the kind of things we usually want to do. When you slow down material to half speed, you also get a bit of a ripple due to the expansion technology used. I guess if you were trying to learn a complex piano piece, however, this feature might be handy where you could slow it down to half speed and hear more detail in the notes. So that's the controls and connectors. It's a relatively simple device. It pretty much does what it claims to do and is relatively easy to use without a whole lot of complex controls and switches. The R1 uses two AA batteries or a power supply, which comes with the unit. I should mention here that the unit is extremely power hungry. It claims in the manual that you get 2.5 hours of record time and 5.5 hours of play time with AA alkaline batteries. I found in my particular case with the alkaline AA batteries we have available at work that we only got about 1 hour and 2 minutes of straight recording time out of a brand new set of batteries recording to a 96 kbps MP3 file. These probably aren't the best batteries you can buy, but they're certainly not the worst, so it may appear that the claims in the manual are a little optimistic about battery life. My advice here is that you either use nickel metal hydride rechargeables or perhaps lithium AA's. I'm using lithium AA's right now for this review, and I suspect you could probably get easily 6 hours of play and or record time, 6 hours of typical use at a minimum. The power requirement here is one of the drawbacks of the unit. The manual recommends that you use it plugged in, and I really can't imagine why somebody would buy a device like this with intent to use it mostly plugged in. I mean, it's really a portable device. It's really meant to be used out in the field or in situations where you need to record in a hurry. And keeping it plugged in just is not really a realistic option. This is a solid-state compact flash card recorder, and it comes with a 64-meg compact flash card. And I can't recall if the card is already in the unit or if you have to insert it when you get it. I believe you have to insert it. And I should mention here that the orientation of the flash card is kind of unusual in this device. First, you slide out a door on the bottom of the device, which is a strange hinged door. It sort of flops all around, but it does stay attached to the device. And then you slide the flash card in, but you do it in such a way that it would appear upside down to the normal orientation. In other words, as you hold the unit with the controls facing up, you slide the flash card in with the label facing down. The 64-meg flash card that comes with the unit is kind of silly. 64-meg is enough to hold just over 6 minutes of CD audio quality recording. So you're going to have to get a real serious flash card if you plan to use this device for anything. A 1-gig flash card would give you about 100 minutes, roughly, of CD quality audio. And I would probably recommend at a minimum that a person would use a 1-gig card. Okay, let's talk about recording formats. The R1 always records to a file which has a sample rate of 44,100 hertz. It records to a variety of MP3 formats, which range anywhere from 64 kbps up through 320 kbps, and it also records to 16-bit or 24-bit WAV files. Since this is a WAV recorder, you'll probably want to use it in the WAV mode, although MP3 formats could be handy in situations where the recording isn't as critical and you need to save space. The other advantage, of course, to recording to the raw WAV file is that you can transfer the file back to your favorite editing environment and work on it there, which is really the intent here. There are no editing capabilities at all on the R1. You know, every time you hit record, you start a new file, but there's no way to edit a file. You can't delete to the end, you can't delete to the beginning, you can't delete a section in the middle, you can't punch into a file. So really all editing chores are going to have to be done on the PC. Some people might consider that a limitation. I think it's fine because, for me, I just want to gather material. There's probably not a device out there that I would prefer to edit on directly rather than use my preferred editing environment on the PC. The navigation really isn't even that good. You can move from track to track, and you can do fast forward and rewind within a track, but the fast forward and rewind are relatively slow, and if you had to get through a relatively large file, say a 10-minute file, you'd spend most of your time holding down the forward button. The R1 uses a flat file system for recording and will support folders for playback only. So anytime you make a recording on the R1, it always goes into the root of the flash card. Files are essentially numbered, starting at 1, and the unit supports a substantial amount of files. One of the drawbacks to the file scheme is that the unit does not contain an internal clock, so all the files have the same date and timestamp, unfortunately. So you'll really have to, change the file on your PC if you want the date to be meaningful. It is possible to rename a file on the R1, but I have not attempted it and don't suspect it would be terribly accessible. Now for playback, the unit can accept pretty much any MP3 file you can throw at it. It'll play ranging from 16 kbps up through 320 kbps, and it'll also play VBR files. It always plays back at 44,100 hertz, so if your file is not that sample rate, it resamples on the fly as you play back, which can introduce some undesirable artifacts, some aliasing artifacts. So really the working mode of this particular unit is always 44,100 hertz, and it's best to try to stay in those rules. As I mentioned before, it will play files that are in folders, and you can have it shuffle and such. You can have it repeat files. It, in my opinion, really isn't a great MP3 player. It's relatively large, as MP3 players would go, and it's so power-hungry that you'd be best leaving the MP3 playing to a device that's more capable. It also doesn't play files the way they're numbered, but rather in the order that they appear on the card. So it's kind of laced with that drawback as well. As I mentioned before, the R1 has some built-in effects processing available. And this is a feature that I have mixed feelings about. It's kind of a strange feature for a device of this type, because its strength seems to be portability and fairly high-quality field recording capabilities. But nonetheless, there are 13 different effects available. And I'll name these now. These are Easy EQ, Force Speech, which I have no idea what that does, Voice Perform, which basically lets you change the pitch of your voice, Editable EQ, which might be one of the most useful effects available. It's a 10-band graphic equalizer with a plus or minus 12 dB settings for the 12 bands. It also has a noise reducer, which is kind of like a noise gate. Hum noise cut, which is very interesting. We'll get into that a little bit later. Reverb. Internal mic simulator. External mic simulator, where you can choose different mic simulations. And these two, I honestly can't imagine when you would ever use them. Mastering effect, which certainly could be useful in some situations. There's a limiter available, and so you can do some dynamic compression with gain compensation. There's also a center cancel mode if you want to do a little karaoke. You can drop the vocals out of many songs with this feature. Finally, there are the two effects, which are not really effects, they're actually more utility features, are a tuner and a metronome. And the tuner you could use to tune a musical instrument. Its sound doesn't actually get recorded. And the metronome, of course, could be used to play a musical instrument in time. And that metronome sound doesn't actually get recorded either, though it is available in your headphones. One of the advantages of the effects is if you happen to like them, you can use them for either recording or playback. So you're not limited to just new material. You can take your old material and run them through these effects. For example, you may prefer to use an equalizer if you have a pair of headphones that isn't quite up to speed. Or you might want to use the equalizer to tone down the brightness of the built-in microphones. I find them to be quite good, but a little on the bright side. And you could use the equalizer to address that issue. You cannot chain effects at all. Often effects will have similar parameters such as a gain or a low-high tone control. But unfortunately, you can't take the reverb and then pass that through the noise gate, for example. I'm going to demonstrate one of these effects, and I guess I'll do the reverb. One of the nice things about this unit is you can, with a little experience, get through the effect editing process fairly easily. And you can also hear each effect as you change it while you're recording, so you don't have to stop the machine to either turn effects on or off or to edit an effect. If I press my effects on off toggle now, I'll turn effects on, and the unit always remembers the last effect you used. In my case, it was the Easy EQ. I was checking out its features, and I believe I have it set flat at the moment. So now effects are on, and we're in Easy EQ. I'm going to switch to the mode where we choose the effect we want to use. Let's see. Okay, so there's the Force Speech.
There's the Voice Perform thing where you change the pitch of the voice.
And I'll just, there's the 10-band graphic equalizer, and it's set flat right now. I'll just quickly move down to the reverb setting. Here's the reverb setting. And the defaults are okay. I want to demonstrate how you can change the defaults if you don't like them. When you get to the effect you want, which is done with the wheel, you press enter. And now that we've done that, we're on the first editable parameter of the reverb setting, which is a type of reverb. So if I press enter again, I can change the type. And you'll see we have this type, and this type as our three different reverb choices. And the reverb types are hall, room, and plate. So now we're on hall. The second setting is room. And the third setting is plate. Let's move back to hall. I do that by turning the dial twice to the left. Then, interestingly enough here, if you want to make more changes, you press the exit button rather than enter. Then we can use the wheel to go to the next parameter. The next parameter is the reverb decay time. So we press enter to activate that parameter. And then the wheel controls the decay time. As I move the wheel to the left, you'll see that we have a very short decay time. It's almost non-existent there. It's like I'm bouncing off a small wall. And that's all the way to the left. And as we turn the wheel to the right, you'll hear the duration of the reverb increase substantially. And it can go out pretty far. I believe that's the longest decay time there. I set my decay time relatively short as not to be too annoying here. I just want to jump through these other two parameters for demonstration. We hit the exit button and we turn one click to the right on the wheel. And now we're in the area where you control the balance of the dry versus wet signal. So as we move the wheel to the left, you'll see that we have just dry, unreverberated signal. And as we turn the wheel to the right, we begin to hear the reverberated signal. And if we go as far as we can with this parameter, we get just the reverberated signal. That once again shows a happy medium there, and we will hit exit and move to the next parameter and press enter. And this parameter is the low frequency parameter. As you can hear, as I turn the wheel to the right, I get much bassier, or I can pull back the low frequency content as desired. I believe that's 12 clicks either way, so we'll put that back at flat. Then we press escape, we move one more click to the right, and of course then we have the high frequency content. We can make the sound dull, or we can make the sound extremely bright. And we can move that right back to center by going 12 clicks. We go all the way to the right, and then we go 12 clicks to the left, and there's our flat position. And the other effects work in a similar way. Basically, you move to the effect you want, press enter. You move through the parameter list, which you can obtain from the manual if you're willing to scan it in. And then you press enter on the parameter you want to change and essentially change it with the wheel and press exit to continue modifying parameters. Before you get too carried away with the effects, though, remember that they do require more battery power than normal operation. So unfortunately, if all you prefer to do is use the equalizer to modify a slight frequency range, say you want to cut the highs by 4 dB, for example, that's going to cost you a little bit more battery life. Before we leave the topic of effects, let me also mention that there is an option in the menu which lets you hear the signal coming through the machine without having to engage record or record standby. So you could actually theoretically use this unit as an effects processor. Once you plug it in to avoid the automatic shutoff timeout going into effect, you could play a keyboard through it or whatever and essentially pipe that into your speaker system. As a final effects demonstration, I've prepared some recordings using the hum/noise cut feature. And this is kind of an interesting feature because I can see a situation where you might want to use this. Unfortunately, it has artifacts. I've just engaged the hum noise cut feature, and as you can tell, my voice has kind of a chorusing effect, which is an undesirable side effect. But this feature can be very useful in removing 60 and 120 cycle hum noise from various recording sources. For example, if you chose to record a show off the AM radio and you happen to have a lot of static in your neighborhood that night, there's a good possibility you could reduce that noise substantially with this feature. I want to illustrate this now. This is the secret message once masked by 60 Hertz sawtooth noise. This is the secret message once masked by 60 Hertz sawtooth noise. Finally, a message masked by 120 Hertz saw noise. Finally, a message masked by 120 Hertz saw noise. The reason the hum noise cut feature adds a little bit of a chorusing effect to the material being recorded is because it not only works on the root frequency specified, either 50 or 60 hertz, but it also works on the harmonics. This way you can cut anything from hum to static. The feature is also variable, meaning you can apply as much of it as you need to reduce the hum to a reasonable level. Applying less of this feature will result in less chorusing effect. Let me also mention regarding effects that if you change an effect, say you you decide you like the reverb decay to be a certain way, or you prefer to set the equalizer a certain way, all of your changes are lost when you move to the next effect. So unfortunately, you'll have to set a particular effect up each time that you prefer to use it. Now, if you just prefer one effect, the unit will remember your personal settings even when you turn it off. So you can essentially turn it on, hit the effects button, and just go. But if you like to change to different effects often, you'll need to set up your own custom parameters each time. I'm going to cover the menu. The menu is reached by pressing the menu key, which is the third round button in the top row of four buttons. And the menu key is a toggle, so when you're through with the menu, you just press the menu key again to exit the menu. The menu currently contains 14 items in the firmware version I'm using, and I'm using 1.3. Let's go through the items, and I'll give you comments on each one if warranted. The first item is LCD contrast. The second item is LCD backlight. Unfortunately, this has nothing to do with how bright the backlight is. It basically controls how long the backlight remains on when you run it on batteries. If you have the unit plugged in, the backlight stays on all the time. Three is delete file. And the delete file feature can be used by a blind person. It's a little tricky because when you pick delete file, you press enter. Actually, you press enter on any of these menu items to select them. And then you're presented with a file browser in the case of delete file. And the unit wants you to pick the file to be deleted. And you press enter. It asks you if you're sure, and you press enter again. The file browser does start at the beginning of the file list each time. So if you were patient enough to count the files and were not concerned about accidentally erasing the wrong file, you could use this unit to delete a file. But generally, of course, it's a lot easier just to connect up to the USB and do it that way. Item 4 is rename file, and as I mentioned earlier, this is something I wouldn't even bother with. 5 is play mode, and you have a choice between single, sequential, and shuffle. Single mode basically repeats the current selection over and over again. Sequential is the default mode, and that's where it just plays files on the unit as it encounters them. If you record files on the unit, it plays the files you record in the order you recorded them. 6 is the limiter, which is a very, very helpful and important feature to set up on this unit. The limiter is a simple on-off option. So when you move to the limiter option in the menu, you press enter, turn the wheel one click to the right to turn it on, and press enter again to confirm your change. Then you would press the menu key, of course, to exit the menu. And the limiter will, for the most part, prevent you from having a clipped recording signal. As I mentioned earlier, I have the record level all the way up for this interview because the built-in mics tend to be perhaps a little lower than one might prefer. But in a loud situation, you could easily reach full scale, so you'd want to use the limiter. The limiter is fairly aggressive and is not always so desirable. I think if you record in situations often where you can't predetermine the noise level and the level of the signal you want to record, it's probably better to turn the limiter on and leave it on. If, however, you're a more patient person and have the ability to set levels reasonably well, and also know that your source material is going to fall in a certain range, it's probably better to leave the limiter off because it does tend to change the signal level very quickly, which can result in little pops and such in the recording. For this recording, I have the limiter off. And I should mention here that this is a global limiter. This limiter works in conjunction with any of the effects you select from the effects menu, as well as the mastering feature in the effects, which is also contains a limiter of its own. It's more of a gain compensation type limiter. Menu item number 7 is record mode, and this is where you select the recording format, which is various MP3 bit rates from 64kbps through 320kbps, as well as 16-bit wave and 24-bit wave format. I might mention here that the 24-bit wave format to me seems a little gimmicky on a device where the noise floor is not really low enough to benefit from a 24-bit signal. You would probably be better off in most cases, 99% of the time, just using a 16-bit format. I'll also mention that the effects processing is 24-bit, and it does cause the effects to sound pretty decent. Option 8 in the menu is called track splitting. And this option basically is for recording audio CDs on this unit. Once again, this is a feature I would find kind of silly because I can't imagine buying one of these recorders to record audio CDs, since there's many better ways to get audio CDs into a digital format. If you chose this feature, however, the unit would be quite happy to create a new file every time it had a 3 second block of silence. A way to use this feature that might be a little bit more interesting would be kind of as a record sensitivity or Vox type feature, where you could essentially turn the unit on and every time it heard a sound, it would create a new file and begin recording. Menu item 9 is the input monitor, and this feature controls whether you can monitor the input signal through the output jack all the time or only while you're in record or record standby. As I mentioned before, if you turn this feature on, you can essentially use the R1 as an effects processor because you don't have to engage any of the record features to run a signal through it. Item 10 is input select, and your choices here are mono or stereo. And the only thing this feature does is if you select mono, it takes the left side of the signal at the input and copies it to both channels of the output file. You always get a stereo output file. And of course, stereo is the default mode of operation here. 11 is the sleep timer. I believe the default is 3 minutes. I haven't tried to change it on this particular unit. You can turn it off if you want to really kill your batteries. But it's probably better to leave it on. If you leave the unit unattended in stop mode, for 3 minutes, it'll shut down. And I don't know how much power it consumes when it's in sleep mode, but it's safe to assume that it's substantially less than it would be if the unit was powered up. Menu item 12 is the format card option. Eddie Roll recommends that you use the R1 to format the cards that you use in it, so this is a great option to learn. Essentially, you go to this option, and I found you had to press Enter 4 times. There must be several confirmations. So you press Enter the first time on number 12 to select the format option. And though I haven't had anybody tell me, it must be are you sure, are you really sure, are you really, really, really sure kind of an option. In any case, if you press Enter 4 times, you'll be able to successfully format a new card for use in the R1. 13 displays the firmware version, and item 14 is an about box for the R1 that gives copyright information. Finally, there's one real important feature you should know regarding changing settings in the menu. There's a very simple way to restore factory defaults on this unit, and I love this feature because when you first get the unit, you want to play with it, and you want to change things, and you're not really sure what you're doing. Or even as an advanced user, you may accidentally select the wrong menu item and not know what you changed, or find out that you changed something you didn't want to change. To restore defaults on this unit, you hold down the Enter key when you turn the power on. And that brings you back to the factory defaults, which are fairly obvious. The factory default recording format is a 192K BPS MP3 file, which is a pretty decent quality setting. Before we leave the menu entirely, let me just also mention these facts. The menu items don't wrap on this particular version of the firmware, which is great. If you go into the menu and say, for example, you change your recording format, which is item 7, if you go back into the menu, you'll be on item 7, so you kind of have to remember where you left the unit. But if you roll the wheel to the left, a maximum of 14 clicks, you'll be on item 1. And at that point, no matter how many times you roll the wheel to the left, you'll still be on item 1. So you can always peg to item 1 or peg to item 14 and work your way back if you wish. If you connect the USB, however, when you disconnect, the menu will be set back to item number 1. It also goes back to menu item 1 if you turn the unit off and back on again. The effects also don't wrap. So, for example, if you go to the reverb effect and edit it and change the high frequency option, turning the wheel to the right one more time has no effect. In the equalizer, for example, you could spin the wheel all the way to the left to get to the 32 hertz setting and all the way to the right to get to the 16 kHz setting. So there's some nice little shortcuts that you can use once you've learned the unit. Unfortunately, in normal mode, the wheel acts as a track selector, and that does wrap around. I find it more useful, though, to use the previous and next buttons for selecting a song in normal mode rather than the wheel. Also, to forward and rewind within a song, you hold down the previous and next buttons for a substantial period of time. The retail price for the R1 is $550, but I've seen it between $425 and $440 at different places on the web. You can find out more information about this particular unit at eddyroll.com, the manufacturer, and that's spelled E-D-I-R-O-L. And finally, to wrap this up, for those who didn't think this review was technical enough, I want to get into some of the specifications briefly. The frequency range listed in the manual is 20 hertz to 20,000 hertz, a typical frequency range. And unfortunately, they don't break down any detail. In other words, they don't give you mic input versus built-in mic versus playback or any of those things. I've found that in raw wave recording format, you can expect a pretty flat 20 hertz to 20 kHz. In MP3 mode, however, there's a hard cut off at 16 kilohertz. So about 20 to 16 is all you can expect in MP3 mode. I find the built-in mics to be quite good, but the lowest noise level you can expect to get out of this with the gain control all the way up using the built-in mics would be about negative 60 dB peak, unfortunately. So there's quite a bit of self-noise on the built-ins, which is probably decent for a unit of this type, but I would prefer that the self-noise be a little bit lower. If you turn the input level all the way down and record essentially silence, you get a peak noise floor of about negative 75 dB, which isn't bad, but again, it would be nice to see a little bit better performance there as well. And this particular figure is why I recommend that people don't use this in 24-bit mode, because you still get this negative 75 dB peak noise level even in 24-bit mode. So the benefits of going to 24-bit mode would be perhaps a slight difference in quantization noise, but the noise floor is such that it provides basically a dithering effect and pretty much is going to wipe out any signals that are really low level. There's two things I've noticed about the built-in mics you might be interested in. The first is that they seem to have a bit of a peak at the high end and a bit of a peak at the low end. They're real sensitive to bass, and as you can probably tell by this review, they're fairly bright. They're not horrible, but they're certainly not flat by any means. The equalizer may be useful in some of these situations. The other thing I've noticed is, even though the manual doesn't give specifications here, they seem to be able to handle a pretty good, strong SPL. Of course, I have no way of determining what the maximum SPL that the mics could handle might be. However, it does seem like it would be fairly strong. So they would probably be good in a concert situation. You could pull back the gain, and they would probably come through fairly well. Now, the output is not as quiet as one might prefer. It's quiet enough for a quick playback of recordings to see how they are, but if you really want to seriously hear the file, you need to send it over to your PC and play it on your sound card. The headphone output level is rated at plus 9 dBU, which is about 2.18 volts, and that's fairly loud. There's plenty of devices on the market, as we all know, that don't play loud enough, and I think with most recordings, especially commercially produced recordings, you're going to have plenty of output level with this headphone jack. Now, when you make a recording with a device and you have your levels a little low, or the recorded material is just a soft material, there's going to be times you're going to wish for just a little bit more kick on that output. The output level will clip if pushed to full scale. I didn't do any measurements, but it gets reasonably loud before the clipping point. So, you know, most of the range is fairly usable. This concludes our review of the Eddyroll R1 Wave/MP3 Recorder. And well, I hope you enjoyed it. This was my first review, so go easy on me, okay?